From Iowa Public Radio News, this is Under the Golden Dome, a weekly podcast about the legislative session. I'm John Pemble.
This part of the session is always difficult, I think, for all of us, and we never seem to be able to do what we need to do for Iowans.
Representative Timmy Brown Powers speaks during a discussion about the budget for administration and regulation.
The priorities in this House this year are very questionable.
Funding is down for the majority of the state's departments. It could lead to fewer state employees, pay raises, state services, and in some cases, the elimination of a department.
We're pumping $700,000 into a non-existent problem. What a mess you Republicans have gotten us into.
Representative Bruce Hunter brings up voter ID. For it to be implemented, it will require around $700,000. He says the state has no business spending money for this program, especially with a tight budget. A budget Representative Hunter claims should not be tight.
Well, the amount of money coming into this state is not the issue. Post-recession revenues have increased every year.
It's a claim Democrats are making through the year that there are too many tax cuts and incentives taking away money from the general operating fund. The last week of the legislative session focuses on the budget, and these conversations are continuing right now as this podcast is being recorded early Friday afternoon. It was intended to make this the last podcast episode in this series, but we're going to produce one more next week. It's about the budget, and it will have a recap of the session overall. Today, let's focus on some of the last non-budget bills passing through the chambers. Some of these we've gone through before, like the consumer fireworks legislation. The Senate passed it a month ago. Days before it comes up in the House, floor manager Representative Matt Winschuttle is hesitant to bring it up.
We will try and bring the bill up on Monday, and it would be ill-advised to put a bill on the floor, especially something like that, that you are not positive that you have 51 votes for.
By Tuesday morning, Representative Winschuttle is confident he has the votes and delivers the opening comments.
4th of July. What does that mean to you? What does it mean to every American? When I think about the 4th of July, I think about freedom. I think about fun. And I think about fireworks. The bill before us would allow Iowans the opportunity to make decisions for themselves, whether they want to use fireworks or not. About 40 other states across the nation right now allow their citizens the opportunity to make that same decision for themselves.
State your point.
Normally, a point of order is not a good sign for whoever's speaking, but in this case, members of the House are making too much noise.
Representative Taylor, you are correct. The noise level has become excessive, and I would ask the chamber to keep their conversations outside the chamber. Thank you. Please proceed, Representative Winschuttle.
Thank you, Madam Speaker, and thank you, Representative Taylor. I appreciate that. As I was saying, there are numerous states across this nation that allow their citizens more freedoms than what Iowa allows their citizens. Now, we've passed a fireworks bill in this body before. It was 2 years ago. It was on May 20th. And it garnered what I would consider wide bipartisan support. 9 members from the minority chose to join with many members of the majority and pass a bill, 53 votes. We sent it to the Senate, and unfortunately, the Senate was not able to take it up. The bill we have before us is very similar to what we were trying to establish 2 years ago. However, we have corralled down the dates for when consumer fireworks may be sold and when they may be utilized. The bill we passed with wide bipartisan support 2 years ago was, for lack of a better term, an open season on the sale and use of consumer fireworks. This bill establishes that consumer fireworks can be sold and used only between June 1st and July 8th. It also sets up dates between December 10th and January 3rd. So we've greatly corralled down when we're going to be hearing fireworks and when folks in Iowa are going to be using fireworks. We've also established a date range for temporary structures. So those community organizations or nonprofits that want to sell consumer fireworks within their community, they will have a date range to be able to sell fireworks only between June 13th and July 8th. I really don't think somebody wants to be out in the middle of December selling fireworks in a tent. So we decided the summer holiday would be a better opportunity for those tents to be out there. We also establish in this bill local control. This is something that we worked on in a bipartisan fashion 2 years ago. And the local control that we provide is that if a community, a city or a county, wants to ban the use of fireworks within the limits of their domain, they can do so. But it's not just a ban. If they want to limit the use of fireworks, if they want to limit when fireworks are used, or if they want to say around certain areas, let's say a nursing home or a veterinary clinic or other sensitive areas, they can ban the usage around those areas as well. That's already well established within the bill.
Representative Dave Jacoby presents an amendment that would force Iowa to only sell consumer fireworks made in the United States.
In his opening comments, the representative mentioned sending a clean bill down to the governor. What could be a cleaner bill than enjoying freedom, the 4th of July, and fireworks made in the United States of America?
Representative Winschuttle says he likes the idea of buying American-made products.
If we want to have entrepreneurs come in and manufacture them here in the state, I'm all for it. I do try and buy American. I'm sure most people in this chamber and most people in this country do try and buy American. But let's allow Iowans to make that decision for themselves and not dictate it through this amendment.
Another from Representative Jacoby involves limiting the consumption of alcohol while lighting fireworks.
If we expect people to be responsible while the use of fireworks, then let's set the alcohol concentration level the same as we do for driving a motor vehicle as for operating fireworks. A person who violates this paragraph in Amendment 1374 would commit a simple misdemeanor, which would be punishable by a fine of $250.
Representative Winschuttle says Iowans are responsible enough to not drink too much while lighting fireworks.
Folks that are using these consumer-grade fireworks are doing so on their own real property. Now, I'm not advocating that anybody go out there and be intoxicated and use fireworks. I don't think that's wise, and I don't think that's prudent. I also don't think that many Iowans are going to be doing that if we legalize fireworks with this bill. For that idiot out there that's going to do that, that's the same guy that's already driving down to Missouri right now, loading up the bed of his truck, getting a whole load of fireworks and a couple cases of beer, and driving back to Iowa, and they're already going to do it, regardless of what we put in this legislation here today. The Iowans that we're offering this opportunity to are not going to go out and get drunk and start shooting fireworks in their own backyard. And if they do so, that's their American choice and their American freedom.
Representative Mary Masher supports the amendment about alcohol.
This is just common sense. This is what we should be looking at in terms of how do we make this as safe as possible for everyone. There's no stipulation in this on age, am I correct, Representative Winschuttle?
Would the gentleman yield?
Sorry, thank
you.
Yes,
ma'am, I will.
You are in order.
Is there any conditions for age on this at all?
The conditions on age are that someone that is selling consumer fireworks has to sell to someone that's 18 years of age or older.
But what happens on their property? Can a child under the age of 18 shoot them off?
If a parent makes that decision for their child to do that or allow their child to do that, yes, ma'am.
Can a child be inebriated and shoot them off?
You're asking a hypothetical question.
Of course I am. That's what we deal with.
Representative Masher, please allow me to answer your question. You're asking me a hypothetical question. Could a child be inebriated and shoot off fireworks? We all know the answer to a hypothetical question. It can go either way. The answer is yes and the answer is no. What you're asking me is, in reality, is that going to be the case? And the reality is, no, ma'am, I don't believe that to be the case. I don't believe a parent's going to allow their child to get drunk and go shoot off fireworks in the state of Iowa. Iowans are better than that.
Representative Winschuttle, thank you. You answered the question. Ladies and gentlemen, I can tell you right now that is going to happen and it's going to be frequent. Because as soon as the parents buy the fireworks and give them to the 18 kid under the age of 18, they're going to take them anywhere they want and shoot them off. And it is not going to be something that is pretty when we know that teenagers oftentimes do not make good decisions. Adults sometimes do not make good decisions, and people are injured. And again, if we're going to pass legislation, we should make it as safe as possible. Representative Jacoby, your amendment makes a whole lot of sense because what we legislate against is stupid ideas and stupid people who make bad choices and bad decisions. And we know it happens every single day, and people are hurt by those stupid decisions.
One reason Representative Windschuttle was worried about getting at least 51 votes is because some Republicans will not support the bill. Republican Representative Dave Maxwell says explosions from consumer fireworks are not good for some returning veterans.
During my service in Vietnam, it happened to be where we were at, and we had a lot of incoming all the time, so you were always never really rested. And I did not have PTSD. I was lucky. I wasn't out in the field. I just had the constant thing of being on alert because there's incoming going to be tonight or tomorrow night or whenever. I never got over that until I happened to talk to a National Guard chaplain one day. He visited our church, and he brought up that subject, wondered if I had trouble sleeping at night. Anyway, it's common. But lots of people I knew suffered from severe PTSD. And I know people that today go looking for a place to hide. They want to disappear around the 4th of July. And we're just opening that up for a whole year's worth of terror for them. And I don't care. We can say it's only illegal for a month in July and a month in December, but we know it doesn't work that way. I hope that, one other item. The friend of mine, I have a friend. I didn't know him when I was in Vietnam. I met him, maybe in the last 5-6 years after I was running for office, but he happened to have this wonderful job driving the company commander's Jeep, and they ran over a mine, of course, and now he's blind, been blind ever since, but he worked with veterans trying to get them through the PTSD, but the treatment that he did for other people never caught on with himself, and to this day, he spends most of the holiday weekends in the basement with music on. I hope modern-day veterans receive a little bit better treatment for that than veterans my generation. And I do not think that the freedoms to shoot fireworks and a few tax dollars are worth what we expect our veterans to pay even today.
During closing remarks, Representative Windschuttle talks about his experience of returning home after serving in the military.
I remember when I first got back from Iraq. I'd done one tour with my Marine Corps unit, and I remember those first few months. I remember hearing a car backfire, and I instantly reached for that Kevlar that I didn't have anymore because I turned it in. I was home now. Hearing a door slam and trying to find a table to duck under because that's what it sounded like when the mortars came in. Folks, I understand the plight of those veterans. I get it. I was not in the thick of it like many folks were in Vietnam or some folks in the recent wars we've had, but I understand that. But I've also gone back and I've talked to veterans who have been in much worse situations than I ever was, and I've asked them, how do you feel about stuff like this? You know what the resounding answer I got back? Matt, I fought for freedom, and I understand that I might not like these loud noises, and it may bring back flashbacks, but I fought for freedom. For people to be able to make decisions for themselves. So, I'll end with this. When the rockets' red glare and the bombs bursting in air gave proof to the night that our flag was still there. Madam Speaker, I move Senate File 489. Let's expand Iowa's freedoms today.
It passes 56-41, with a few Democrats voting for and a few Republicans voting against. It's likely to be signed into law by the governor, making this summer the first one Iowans can legally buy and shoot off fireworks like aerial shell kits, reloadable tubes, chasers, helicopters, aerial spinners, firecrackers, mine and shell devices, missile-type rockets, skyrockets and bottle rockets, and Roman candles. You can only do so June 1st through July 8th and December 10th through July 3rd between 9 a.m. and 10 p.m., except on July 4th, where you can go until 11 p.m., and on New Year's Eve, 12:30 a.m., New Year's Day. You can also explode things until 11 p.m. on the weekends before and after July 4th, as well as the weekends before and after New Year's Eve. If you rent an apartment or a house, you need to get permission from the landowner to shoot off fireworks with or without a beer in your hand. Or a wine cooler. Or a little whiskey. You get the point. This is Under the Golden Dome, a weekly podcast about the legislative session. I'm John Pimble. Although Governor Branstad has yet to be confirmed as the U.S. ambassador to China, the administration is making preparations for him to resign, leading to the beginning of Kim Reynolds' governorship. Such a transition has a cost associated, and $150,000 is being set aside. Point of comparison, in 1999, Governor Vilsack's incoming administration was appropriated $25,000. In 2008, for Governor Chet Culver, it was $170,000. Now, this was for an entirely new administration. Lieutenant Governor Kim Reynolds says the figure of $150,000 is there to provide changes in staff.
There will be staff turnover. They'll be looking at other opportunities, and so I want the flexibility to be able to address that, which again doesn't mean that I'm going to go in there and spend $150,000. The other thing with our budget is we don't have a lot of the flexibility that some of the other agencies do, because we were already implementing the 20% payment towards our health care cost, and so some of the other agencies hadn't implemented that, and so they've got a little bit of flexibility with the collective bargaining reform to really manage the resources, and we just haven't had the ability to do that. So, I don't think it's unreasonable to ask for that. Again, it's been, it's precedent, it's been done before, and it will be used only for expenditures related to the transition.
In the event someone leaves their Iowa job, this fund can be used to pay out benefits like unused vacation time. Any money not used in this fund will be returned to the state. As the legislature's adjournment nears, Lieutenant Governor Reynolds says it's been a historic session.
These legislators ran on, really implementing legislation that would take Iowa to the next level. I'm really proud of the foundation that we put in place over the last 6 years, especially with a very tough budget cycle. But I think what they've done is they've implemented legislation that will help create an environment where Iowa can continue to grow and be competitive, and I'm excited about that. So I think it's a historic session, and I'm proud of the work that they've been able to get done.
Legislators pushed through a bill this year prohibiting texting while driving.
The bill elevates the act of sending a message while driving to a primary traffic offense, and that means that if you're engaging in sending a text, an email, or video message of any kind, you can be pulled over and issued a citation.
The bill ceremony is outside of the Iowa Department of Public Safety headquarters.
I'm confident that this bill will help send the message to drivers in our state, eyes on the road while driving.
Governor Branstad says Iowa is one of the last states to make texting while driving a primary offense.
I think there's only four states that hadn't done that. So this is certainly a good step in the right direction. I think it's going to make a difference.
The fine for texting while driving is $30. The governor hoped the new law would include a hands-free provision.
We are pleased that we saw this progress this year. And obviously we'll see how this works. But a number of states have gone beyond this. Going further with the hands-free would be something that should be considered in the future.
Another bill the governor plans to sign is one that bans abortions after 20 weeks. It's been going back and forth from the Senate to the House, which amended it, and this week it's back in the Senate. Floor manager Senator Mark Costello reminds the body they passed an earlier version of this bill, but now they need to consider the added amendment, which has more restrictions.
The House has made some changes to our bill. They do retain the 20-week standard post-fertilization as the time frame after which an abortion would be prohibited. At 20 weeks, the baby is fully formed and developed. That's 5 months or so. And I remember I've got five children, and it's about 5 months when I could put my hand on my wife's tummy and feel the baby kicking, and she could feel the baby moving around, and that life there is being very evident at 5 months. Some of the changes that the House has made, their amendment does allow for an abortion if the doctor determines it is necessary to preserve the life or health of the mother. It establishes a 3-day waiting period before a woman could have an abortion. That's 72 hours And at that time, when she goes in to first sign to start the waiting period, it provides that a woman must be given the option of viewing an ultrasound. An ultrasound must be done, and hearing the heartbeat of the unborn child. And she will also be provided with information developed by the Iowa Department of Public Health, giving the options that she has regarding adoption or aid in caring for the child if she chooses to keep the child. Also, would inform her of risk factors of having an abortion, including physical, psychological, or other factors related to an abortion. The House took out an exception that we had for a fetal anomaly. We had allowed another 4 weeks for the mother to decide whether to have the baby aborted at that time. They have removed that. In their bill, they do not have criminal penalties for the abortions, and but they do have license penalties. They did not go into the feticide portion of the bill. So if it's post the current law, forbids abortions to the after the second trimester. So if a woman has an abortion after the second trimester, those criminal penalties for the abortionist would still apply. It adds language which requires doctors to submit reports regarding how many abortions they have attempted and performed. Also, this would allow a woman upon whom an abortion has been performed in violation of the bill to seek actual damages from the physician. And she could also sue for injunctive relief to prevent a physician from performing any more abortions. Or if she's under 18, her parents could sue for that injunctive, or can seek that injunctive relief, or else the county attorney in the proper jurisdiction or the attorney general could sue to stop those abortions.
Senator Joe Bolcom says the new language puts women and their families at risk.
There's a lot in this amendment that creates unnecessary barriers to a safe, legal medical procedure. I'd like to point out a couple of the more concerning pieces of the amendment. Let's start with the 72-hour waiting period. Waiting periods are bad for women's health. Waiting period laws do not offer any health benefits and, in fact, have a negative effect on women's health. Waiting periods, particularly those which require two visits, which this amendment does, are especially burdensome to rural women and those living in poverty who may not be able to take extra days off from work, travel long distances, or find appropriate child care while they are away from home. Waiting period laws are harmful to women and families in tragic situations. They can be particularly cruel to women and their families in heartbreaking situations who, after careful consideration, need to end a pregnancy but experience lengthy, unnecessary delays in accessing safe care.
Senator Mark Shelgren supports this version of the bill, but he is disappointed it doesn't include exceptions for fetal anomalies.
As many of you know, the fetal anomaly part of that bill was something that I wrote and researched and talked to people I trusted. So I am disappointed that it's not in there, but I also remember trying to put an amendment on that bill in this chamber. Senator Bolcom, I respected the fact that you asked for a ruling on whether it was germane, and it was the 72-hour clause. But when I hear from my fellow senators saying that to put a 72-hour waiting period is condescending and insulting, that women don't go on a whim, that's a long and careful thought, I go back to a letter received by me from one of my constituents. I had an abortion a few years ago that left me not able to have any more children. The type of abortion is where they place something on my cervix and let it sit there for 20 minutes. An hour later, everything in my uterus came out, and from that point, I could no longer conceive. The abortion left me feeling useless and regretful for even doing it. But Planned Parenthood told me this was the best thing for me, and get this part, when I first went in for a pregnancy test, she didn't go in for an abortion, she went in for a pregnancy test. I wasn't considering abortion until they told me that this wasn't a child who should live in this world with a mother who could not financially provide for the child. And after them convincing me of this is what I should do, I had it done. Do you want to know why we wait 72 hours? For women like this. It's the timeshare clause. No one would buy a timeshare if they were able to go home and talk to their friends, talk to their neighbors, pray about it, sleep on it, and talk to people they trusted. Anyone who wants to get an abortion and has made that decision can do so under this bill prior to the time frame. All they have to do is wait 72 hours to make sure that that decision was right, because it's an irreversible decision. That 72-hour clause that was challenged on our first bill is back.
Senator Rick Bertrand supports this bill, but is very frustrated the legislature isn't restricting abortion further with an all-Republican state government.
This would be a great bill in a split chamber. Great bill. So I keep asking the question, which I've been asking from day one. And again, I'm the moderate. Remember that in this chamber. I am the moderate. If not now, when? If not now, when? Next year. Next year. We'll tackle that. So we file the amendment. Let's back up. We start talking about life. 20 weeks, all we can get. All we can get is 20 weeks. That's all the House will do. We send over 20 weeks because that's what the House is tolerable. That's what they can tolerate to get through their caucus. So we send it over. What's the first thing the House do like they've been doing all year? They amend it. They put their stuff on it because their ideas are better than ours. Better than ours. So they send it back. We can't touch it. We can't touch it because I don't know where it came along, but the House put their stuff on, and we can't touch it because we can't send it back. Because if we send it back, House is going to kill it. I doubt it, just like we didn't kill it. So 20 weeks, they send it back. So what do? We try to file an amendment because discussion gets shut down, and this is what we're going to do, and this is going to be our life bill. So what do we do? What do? We don't come over and talk to the guy that files the amendment. We don't talk. What do? Who can we get to go down and germane it? Let's get Senator Shelgren down there. Well, hey, guess what, buddy? You did it. You shut her down. You got used again. But no. In this chamber, we're going to go to the mat for collective bargaining. We're going to go to the mat for work comp. We're going to go to the mat. We're just going to go to the mat. But when it comes to life, we're not going to go to the mat because this is all we can get. Are you kidding me? You know, when I came 7 years ago, I said to myself, I could care less about my voting record. And I guess I've proven that. Because I made just as many Republicans and Democrats mad at home. But what I wanted was results. And when we finally get a trifecta, we finally get control. This is a Chet Culver moment is what this is when he goes against. We finally get an opportunity, and what do? This is it. And we're all going to praise ourselves, and we took some people off the hook, and that's fine.
The amended bill passes. The governor is expected to sign it into law. Through this session, abortion restrictions are a priority for Republicans. It starts in the first week during the governor's condition of the state, where he says he wants to remove state funding to any organization that performs abortions. Democrats do not support the Republican effort to restrict abortion, but they are powerless to do anything to prevent their bills from passing. But during a Senate confirmation hearing, Democrats end the terms for two members from the Iowa Board of Medicine who voted to make some forms of abortion illegal. In 2013, Diane Clark, a retired physician service administrator, and Dr. Hamad Tufik, a radiation oncologist at the Iowa City Cancer Treatment Center, voted while on the board to ban telemed abortions. This is a process where a doctor speaks with a woman via a video conference in a clinic. In a telemed abortion, the doctor remotely prescribes and delivers via a remote-controlled drawer drugs that will stop a pregnancy. In 2015, the Iowa Supreme Court overruled that ban. Diane Clark and Hamad Tufik require Senate confirmation to continue on the Iowa Board of Medicine.
Is there a discussion on the appointment? The chair recognizes Senator from Polk, Senator Peterson.
When consideration for Diane Clark's reappointment comes up, Senator Janet Peterson states her objection by bringing up the 2015 Supreme Court decision nullifying a vote made by Diane Clark to ban telemed abortions.
In 2015, the Iowa Supreme Court unanimously ruled that the ban by the Iowa Board of Medicine and the Branstad-Reynolds administration violated the Iowa Constitution.
Senator Robbie Smith is supporting the confirmation of Diane Clark and asks Senator Peterson more about her objection.
Senator Peterson, you were on the subcommittee for Diane Clark to the Board of Medicine. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Did you get a chance to call her?
No, I looked at her voting record and used that to make my decision.
Okay. Did you have a chance to email her or text and ask her why she voted the way she did on the board when that issue came up that you referenced in your remarks?
I didn't need to hear any rationale. I had my mind made up.
Senate President Jack Whitfer reads the results of the vote.
Those voting aye, 32. Those voting no, 18. The nominee not having received a two-thirds majority is not confirmed.
As Senator Randy Feenstra begins his opening remarks for Dr. Hamad Tufik, he is stunned Clark is not confirmed, and he knows chances for Tufik's confirmation are slim.
Just can't imagine that just happened. I just can't imagine that just happened. I have Dr. Hamad H. Tufik, wonderful doctor of radiation oncology, cancer doctor, immigrated from Egypt in 1970, came to Buffalo, New York. In 1972, he came to Iowa to visit his cousin, who was a dentist. It was a spring day, and he came over and he thought, wow, if this is what Iowa is on a spring day, I want to stay here. I want to stay in Iowa. And he laughs about that, saying, I didn't realize that Iowa was sort of like Buffalo. But he stayed because he fell in love with Iowa. He fell in love with the people of Iowa. So he served on this board now for 6 years, and now he's asking to serve three more years to finish out his last and final term.
Senator Janet Peterson reiterates her objection to a member of the Iowa Board of Medicine voting to ban a form of abortion.
I'd encourage my colleagues to support the constitutional rights of Iowa women. I encourage my colleagues to support safe medical care, not politics. This is the Board of Medicine, not the Board of Politics.
Seeing no further discussion, the chair recognizes the senator from Sioux for final remarks on the appointment of Hamad Tufik.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Peterson, would you yield?
Senator Peterson, would you yield?
Yes.
You are in order.
Senator Peterson, can you talk a little bit about the conversation you had with Dr. Hamad Tufik concerning his reappointment?
I checked his voting record. I was assigned three Board of Medicine nominees, two of which I checked their voting and they were reappointments. I checked their voting records. The other person I sent an email to and he was not a reappointment, and I had his nomination go through. or hers, I can't remember if it was a he or she.
So I guess yes or no, you did or did not call him?
I did not. I checked his voting record, and that was all the information I needed to make up my mind on this appointment.
Okay, I got a question for you. You said this is not, let's not have politics. What you just said, isn't this the greatest political answer that you could give? Don't vote for this immigrant, Dr. Hamad Tufik, because of some political, what you say is not political. But
I might point of order you. I don't know what you're trying to accuse me of, but I think that's out of line, sir.
No, you said it's politics. I'm just asking, tell me how this is politics, not play politics. I'm saying, how are we playing politics? That's what I want to know.
This is the Board of Medicine. This is the Board of Medicine. This is not Governor Branstad and Kim Reynolds' board that they politically stack with people who won't back a woman's constitutional right for a legal medical procedure.
Okay, I have one question. So just to clarify what you're saying, this is one vote out of several hundred this immigrant took.
Yes, and it's a very important vote.
One vote.
It's a very important vote, I believe.
Thank you, Senator Pearson. I don't even know what to say. I tell you what, let's talk about tolerance. Let's talk about tolerance. You know, you Democrats, you talk about tolerance all the time, right? Oh, we gotta have tolerance.
Point of order.
What's the
Senator Yoakum, Senator Feenstra, please come to the well.
After a moment at the Senate well, Senator Feenstra continues to vent his anger.
I just want to ask the Democrats. I want to ask you, you're taking down an immigrant that loves Iowa, that loves the people of Iowa, that wants to serve. And in your political estimation, he made a wrong vote. He didn't do what you wanted him to do, so you're taking him down. So how does this square up? How do you square this up? If somebody doesn't go against your liberal agenda, that we don't approve of them? I live in Highland Park when I'm here. It's a wonderful, diverse community. It's awesome. I learned a lot there. I come out of a rural community, and I've always told my kids, you know what? Your dad learned a lot being here, living there. I learned what diversity is. I also learned that we all have and see different things through lenses, through how society interacts. Dr. Hamad has done the same thing over the generations of being a doctor, being an oncologist. When I talked to him, it was a very difficult vote, but through all his data and all his research, he thought he made the best decision. Obviously, now it's political. And we're taking him down. We're taking him down because of one vote. Can you imagine if in Highland Park, if I said, you know what, I don't accept what you believe in. You're not one of me because you didn't believe my certain view. How intolerant is that? It's actually bigoted. It's prejudice. It's intolerance. And if this was the first time in this chamber, I wouldn't probably get as upset. But I saw my good friend just a week ago. You got a Mormon Bible on your desk? Yeah, I'm tired of the Democrats thinking that, hey, you know what? We believe in tolerance. We accept everybody. Oh, no. No, just your agenda. I'm so disappointed right now. I'm absolutely disappointed.
Dr. Hamad Tufik's confirmation vote fails. His term ends on April 30th. Diane Clark's, ended on April 13th. She was the chair of the Iowa Board of Medicine. This is Under the Golden Dome, a weekly podcast about the legislative session. As I record my voice for this show early Friday afternoon, the session has not adjourned, but there is a chance that by the time you hear this, they will have finished. For this Week 15 show, we decided to stay away from much of the talk about the state's budget and focus on the final passage of some non-budget bills. We are coming back next week after the adjournment for the final installment of Under the Golden Dome. We'll go through aspects of the budget, and as you can guess, this part of the session is complicated and long. In an unusual announcement to the Senate, President Jack Whitfer announces there aren't as many copies available of a budget bill compared to other bills.
We have a limited number of paper copies available on my desk right here in the corner. I believe it's been delivered electronically as well under the Senate rules.
The number of pages for the original bill and amendment is 302. 302 pages just for the appropriations budget. After adjournment, all the budgets will be submitted to the governor. Just because the chambers pass a budget doesn't mean all of it will happen. The governor has line item veto authority, and he's used it in the past. Sometimes it takes a month for the governor to go through the budget and give it his final approval. Now, since he has a pending U.S. ambassador hearing, it is reasonable to assume he will want to move faster. But we'll see. And when he does, this will be part of Iowa Public Radio's news coverage, but not this podcast. After next week's show, we are retiring it for the year. Under the Golden Dome is intended to be in production during the legislative session, so that means we are looking at 2018 to resume this show. The concept for Under the Golden Dome comes from Iowa Public Radio News Program Director Catherine Perkins. Editorial support comes from News Director Michael Leland. State House reporter Joyce Russell contributes a whole lot of stories to this series. We also get help from Clay Masters and Sarah Bowden. Talk show team members are helping. River to River host Ben Kiefer, Dean Borg, and producers Lindsay Moon and Emily Woodbury. We also have media partners working with us like Radio Iowa's Kay Henderson. I'm John Pemble, host of this series, getting ready for our last Under the Golden Dome podcast. We're not sure exactly what day it will come out next week, but I'm guessing by Wednesday, our final show will be available from iowapublicradio.org.